Okay, what we have covered so far, we have to understand one main important thing, that what we have covered in chapter 7, what we have covered in chapter 7 and chapter 9, as I told you, is linked. So the important thing to remember is that the whole creation has only got two components. Whatever is in this creation, including our body, including everything in the world, has only got two components. But there are many different terms used, so we should not get confused. So what are the terms? Number one, this is consciousness, and this is matter. There are only two. But from time to time, you will find different words being used. Example, consciousness, you will find the word Brahman. And when we relate it, that same Brahman, which is unmanifest, which has no attributes, when that same Brahman has matter, combined with matter, takes a form, takes a shape, Krishna form, Rama form, Ganesha form, we call it Ishvara. Okay? So it's a term, what we call as Ishvara means that same Brahman now is appeared in a form that we can pray to, that we can worship. Then here also other terms used were Para Prakriti. Meaning, Prakriti means again nature, Para means higher nature of God, which is what? Unmanifest again. And then the same manifest, when the God takes the manifestation in this world, is called as Apara Prakriti. Then here also, sometimes for consciousness, we use the word Atma. And you will find in text, another text also, Atma, for matter, when it comes to matter, it is called Anatma. Okay? Apart from that, so you can also use the word Kshetra here, which is used in chapter 13. Kshetra means consciousness. Kshetraknya. Kshetraknya means matter. Okay. Then there is Purusha, which is also used in chapter 13, and Prakriti. So no matter what are the terminologies, various terms used, at the end of it, it is only two: consciousness plus matter includes the whole creation. That means our body is also what? Consciousness plus matter. Which part of it is matter? Which part of us is matter? Body is matter. Why? It's subject to change. It perishes. What about mind? Also matter. Why? Subject to change also. What about intellect? Also subject to change. So what part of you then is consciousness? That which enlivens the eyes to see, that which enlivens the nose to smell, that is your consciousness within you. Because without that consciousness, this body is totally dead. It cannot function. So the reason your hands can move, your legs can walk, your eyes can see, that that is the consciousness part in us. So this is basically what has been explained by Krishna in chapter 7 and chapter 9. Now the thing is, what Krishna wants to say here is that the majority of us do not know about the higher nature of God. Most of us are engrossed in the lower nature of God. We worship the God with form. Whatever we pursue in this world, whether we pursue money, power, fame, name, whatever we pursue in this world, what are we pursuing? Lower or higher nature? Lower nature. Why? Because it is constantly changing. It is not secure. So, in our pursuit of the lower nature, why? Because we are ignorant of the higher nature. Or either we are not interested at all. We are so engrossed. That's why another name for this lower nature, or what we call the matter, another name of it is called Maya, because it's so attractive, it's so entertaining, we are so attracted to it. Whatever fame, name, power, whatever we want to find, it is all here in Maya. And Maya also contains the three gunas. Where are the three gunas? Sattva, Rajas, Tamas, not in the higher nature but in the lower nature. That is what makes the world colorful, vibrant, different. That difference is caused by the three gunas. So the three gunas in the lower nature is called as Maya. It's another name for the lower nature. And thus Krishna says, those who have no knowledge of my higher nature, or those who are not interested, they pursue the lower nature. And what is the problem? You might say, so what? I am pursuing the lower nature, I have money, I have got fame, I have got name, I have got possessions, so what is wrong? I am not interested in the higher nature. What is the use of coming to higher nature? We go round and round and round, continuous series of birth and death and birth and death. And again we must keep in mind, there is no guarantee that we will come back to the human birth. If our pursuit is only sensual and material needs, there is not necessary for us to have a human body. So for those people is what Krishna is speaking about in the verse last week that we started discussing, verse number 12. Those who have no interest at all in the higher nature of God, and what is the reason? He has given us the reason in verse 12. Then from verses 13 to 19, he will tell us about those people who have understood what is the purpose of this human birth, who have understood why we should come to the higher nature of God. If we are seeking permanence, if we are seeking security, if we are seeking eternal happiness, which should we pursue, lower or higher nature? Higher nature. So there is a group of people who are not interested, who are chasing after the finite pleasures. But there is a group of people who are interested to come to the infinite nature of God. So first of all, in verses 12, he explains to us the other group of people who are only chasing the finite pleasures. Now, so here in verse number 12, he talks about the three important components that drive all of us. As we discussed last week, first is we must have knowledge, jnanam, knowledge of the goal. What is it that we want to achieve in this life? So first there is knowledge. That knowledge of the goal, whatever goal we set, will then drive the desire, that is ichchati, desire. So first, can somebody just close this door? That knowledge of the goal will then drive our desire. And the desire will then in turn drive our action. So there's three components. First, we have knowledge of what is our goal of life. That knowledge will drive our desires. And the desire will drive our action. So if we don't have a proper understanding or knowledge of life, if I do not know what is the purpose of this human birth. You see, when you go to an electronic shop, you buy an appliance. They sell you a complicated set of appliances. And then with that appliance, they give you a operating instruction manual. And is there a problem? Okay, that's great. Does it close? Okay, Rudy, it's okay, leave it. Okay, so if I buy the piece of equipment, I'm given an operating instruction manual. And if I do not know how to use the equipment, I do not read the operating instruction manual, two things can happen. Either I end up damaging the equipment or I end up hurting myself. Similarly, when we have been gifted with this human body, we have also got the operating instruction manual in the form of the scriptures. If we don't take that time and effort to read the scriptures and understand what is the goal and purpose of human life, then we suffer. Who do we blame? Who do we blame? We blame God. Very convenient. Right? So He has given you the gurus, He has given you the scriptures, He has given you the temples, and above all, He has given you the greatest gift, the intellect. And if you do not want to use it, then why blame God? So we know, we are supposed to read the scriptures and know what is the purpose and goal of human life, but these people are not interested. They don't have a proper understanding of the goal of human life. So therefore, if the knowledge itself of these people is improper, so that's what he wants to say in verse number 12, these confused people, who he calls vichetasa, the verse number 12, second line, you see the word vichetasa. Senseless people. Senseless people, vichetasa, meaning they don't use the main equipment that is given to them, that is this buddhi. That intellect has been given to you. Senseless, senseless, vichetasa, senseless people. Who have been gifted with this buddhi, but do not know how to use it or do not want to use it at all in the right way. So why? Because their sattva guna is overpowered by rajas and tamas. So they put in no effort at all. And even though all the scriptures may be there, the gurus may be there, all the learning opportunities may be there, they are not interested because they are more interested in pursuing all their finite pleasures. So when they don't put in the effort, what happens, he says, look back at the second line again, the word moga jnana. Jnana means knowledge. Moga means vain. Vain here means they have a wrong understanding, the wrong knowledge they have about life, about this human form. And their expectations are also wrong. Why are their expectations wrong? Because they are chasing the impermanent things. So they are just chasing everything which they consider as permanent. They think power is permanent, money will always be there, friends will always be there, relatives will always be there, this position I'm sitting will always be there permanently. Everything is permanent, everything is in my control. So this is their wrong expectations. They are seeking security from the insecure. They are seeking permanence from the impermanent. So their expectations are wrong. If the knowledge is wrong and expectations are wrong, therefore he says, look back at the first line, moga asa. Their hopes or their desires also are wrong, futile. They have futile desires, worthless desires, and because of these futile and worthless desires, their actions also will be wrong. So wrong knowledge leads to wrong desires, leads to wrong actions. Now, can you all hear me in the back? Now, first of all, we must understand, many people say that, should I not have desires? As human beings, is it possible for us not to have desires? We all have desires. So what is it that we should understand about desires? First of all, it is natural that desires come and go. There's nothing you can do about it. Your mind is there. Your mind will generate some desires. They will come, they will go. But what is it we should understand? That if I have a desire and I have the capacity to fulfill that desire, then I go ahead and fulfill. If I have a desire to go to Switzerland and I have the money to go to Switzerland, I go to Switzerland. There's nothing wrong. But what is the problem? Huh? You don't? You don't have the money. No, I have the money. I have a desire to go to Switzerland. I go to Switzerland. Is there anything wrong? So what's the problem?
Shortlist.
Never mind, it's shortlist. What's the problem?
What?
So, the problem is... What? The problem is I go to Switzerland and I have a good time. Then I come back. What happens now? I am constantly thinking about that good time I had. So where is my mind now? Constantly reflecting on that good time. Right? And if I get a chance to go again somewhere, what happens? I compare it with that. And if I don't have a good time here, then what happens? I get disappointed. So that means what? If the desire comes, I enjoy it, then what I do? Forget about it. I don't want to get attached to it. It is not having the desire that is wrong. Enjoying the desire also okay. Our problem is we carry that relish in our mind. And once you carry that relish in your mind, you are constantly thinking and thinking and thinking about it. So that is desires which I can satisfy. I have the capacity to satisfy. What about if a desire comes and I am unable to satisfy it? Then what should be our understanding of that desire? I have a desire, but I have no money to satisfy that desire. Then what should be my understanding of that desire? I can't hear you. Accept it. Either you change your preference or you should not get affected. I am not able to satisfy. Okay, forget about it. But our problem is when we cannot satisfy, we get agitated. We get upset. We get angry. So that means there are two problems. One, desire I can satisfy, but then it lingers in my mind. That causes a disturbance. If I am able to enjoy it and forget about it, it's fine. Second, I have a desire, but I cannot satisfy it, and then it leads to agitation. And then what happens? You try to find ways and means how to satisfy that desire. And you might then take shortcuts, you might do something wrong in order to earn the money to satisfy that desire. That's where the problem comes. So if we look at these two problems on desire, if you go back to chapter 2, verse number, okay, look at verse number 59, page 51, chapter 2, verse 59, page 51. Now here Krishna has identified the first problem. He says, sense objects cease for him who does not enjoy them with your senses. That means what? Now the object is not in front of you. You are not, verse 59. I can't. Maybe some of you want to move forward. Page 51. 51. Okay? So, no, the guy is not here, he went off to India. Kumar. Okay. See, when I don't bring the mic, it rains. When I bring it, it doesn't rain. Okay, sense objects cease for him who does not enjoy them with his senses. That means when it is not in front of us, we may go away. But he says what? The taste for them persists. The rasa. So the object might not be in front of you. But where does the taste is? It is in your mind. And that is what causes the disturbance. And what about those objects which we are unable to enjoy? We have a desire but we are unable to enjoy. Look at verse number 62 and 63. The same chapter. page 53, verses 62 and 63. Now these are objects which we have a desire, but we have no capacity to enjoy them. So what happens is that the man dwelling on sense objects, you keep thinking and thinking and thinking about it, you cannot afford it, you keep on thinking and thinking about it, what happens? From them comes the attachment. Then from the attachment comes the desire. The desire becomes stronger. And when the desire cannot be fulfilled, what happens? Comes anger. So desires by themselves are not wrong. But it is our response to the desire that we have to be very careful about. We have to understand, as human beings, we generate desires. We may not be able to control them, but what is our response to them, that is very important. Okay? So now we come back to this chapter 9, verse number 12, where he speaks about these people who have all these kind of vain desires. And they are unable to control them. They are constantly thinking about his desires. Some they are satisfying, but it remains in their mind. Some they cannot satisfy, it keeps on troubling them. And then what happens, he says. So, he says, because of that, moga karmanaha. If you look at the verse number 12, the very first line, now the desire will lead them to vain actions. They will take various type of actions in order to satisfy their desire now. Or if they've enjoyed that, they want to enjoy it again and again. So they are led to more actions, more senseless actions. And as these desires keep on multiplying and multiplying and they are unable to control it, then what happens? Then Krishna says in the third line, Rakshasim Asurim Prakatim Ashritaha. Ashritaha means they are possessed. What are they possessed of? Their prakriti means their nature. Because of all these unending desires driving them, their nature becomes what? Rakshasin or Asurin. Two. Not only one, but two. It is Rakshasin and Asurin. And actually the translation for Rakshas is demons. Asura is also demons, but there is a difference. Why Krishna has used two different words? So what is the difference? Rakshasas, the difference between Rakshasas and Asuras is, Rakshas are destructive people, they are tamasic people. So because of their desires, when they cannot fulfill them, they are going to commit all types of violence. They might kill people, they might rob people, they might produce adulterated products that end up killing people. So their desires are so strong that they are willing to go to destructive means to satisfy their desires. So that is Rakshasas who are driven by tamas. And they will even end up destroying themselves also in the process. And what is... Sorry? Like drug addicts, exactly, like drug addicts. And what is Asuras? Asuras are those that are driven by Rajasic Gunas. That is the difference. Rajasic means they have selfish desires. They are only interested in satisfying their desires. So, Rakshasas are those driven by Tamas. They destroy others, they destroy themselves. Asuras are those who are driven by Rajas, who are selfish people, and also they will resort to all kinds of means to satisfy their desires. So that's why Krishna says they become the very nature of Rakshasas and Asuras. They become selfish people, destructive people. So when our desires come, the first time we satisfy the desire through some illegal means, what happens? Then So once you satisfy a desire by a wrong means, you say, Namai, you have a bit of consciousness that tricks you, right? You feel a little bit guilty. But because you get away with it, then what happens? Second time you do it again. And then your consciousness tricks you, but less. And then you do it the third time, less. And then the fourth time you say what? Everybody is doing it, what's wrong if I also do it? So what happens to your consciousness? It becomes weaker and weaker and weaker. Right? That's why there's a saying that when there is a small flame and there is a wind that blows, the flame will get extinguished. But when the flame is bright, strong, the same wind that blows, what happens to the flame? It gets stronger. So you start to justify your actions. Your intellect will start to justify your actions. So that's why they take the nature of Rakshasas and Asuras. And all because of what? Wrong understanding about what is the purpose of human life. When we don't understand the purpose of human life, we don't understand the purpose of human birth, and we end up pursuing all the finite pleasures with wrong knowledge, we have wrong desires, we have wrong action. And this is what leads to our downfall. And so Krishna says, Mohinam, Mohinam. Mohini means they are bewildered people, they are confused people, deluded as to the purpose of life. Their discrimination gets weaker and weaker and weaker. And in Kali Yuga especially, you'll find a lot of these wrong things happening, a lot of people cheating, and they get away with cheating, they get away with lying, and it is very difficult. And sometimes you think, why not I join the crowd also? Makes it easy for me also, right? So we have to be very careful about this. Now, here is given a description of the one part of people who come to a destructive nature. Now in verse 13, he talks about the other group of people, the good people. That's why the word two is there. If you see in the very first line, two. Two is to differentiate that now he's going to speak about a different group of people who are completely different than the Rakshasas and the Asuras. And so he calls them Mahatmanaha. There are two words, Mahatmanaha. Mahat means great. Atmanaha means souls. Here doesn't mean Atma, it means mind. Those who have a great mind, those who have a pure mind, a perfect mind. So Mahatmanaha means noble people, whose minds are noble. And why are their minds noble? Because they are endowed with sattvic gunas. They have sattvic gunas in them. Their rajasic and tamasic gunas are weak. Their sattvic gunas are strong. And why is it that their sattvic gunas are strong? Why are they noble people? Because they have been born in the right environment also. They have been given a lot of rights, conducive environment. They have been given access to scriptures, to gurus, to temples. They have been given all the right setup to pursue this knowledge. And why is that again? Because of the good actions in the previous birth. So the cumulative good actions that we do in every birth will one day act as a driving force to create the right environment for us to pursue this knowledge. So the very fact that you are pursuing this knowledge means what? You must have done something good in the past few births. So now you can call yourself Mahatmanas, noble people. So it is true that sattvic gunas now are driving you. They are dominant in you. They are driving you to this knowledge. You are having access to the knowledge, and you also have a driving interest in the knowledge also. That's very important. Right? So because only if you have the interest, then only you will pursue it. Otherwise it is available, but many people are not interested to pursue it. So sattvic gunas, and that means what? You are not interested in petty desires of the world. You are not interested in what the world has to offer you. You know they are finite desires, they are fleeting desires. You do not want to waste time pursuing them. Okay? So, what happens now? Now, those people were what? Asuras and Rakshasas. But what are these people? In the second line, Daivim Prakatim Asrita. They possess the very nature of Daivi, Devas, divine. Their nature is divine. They are humble people. They are nice people. They have good thoughts, clean actions. So, their habits and activities are all qualified to be good. Okay? And these good qualities, if you want to know how many of these you possess, you want a checklist, you can check yourself. How many of these good qualities do I have? You can refer to chapter 16 verses 1, 2 and 3. Where there Krishna gives 20 divine qualities. The more of these qualities we have, that means the more divine nature we have. What are the qualities? Humility, love, compassion. Chapter 16 verses 1, 2 and 3. Non-violence. So many good qualities are there. So we can use it as a checklist to see are we progressing in the right direction. Okay? They are called Daivi Sampat. In that chapter 16, he gives the divine qualities and he gives the demoniac qualities also. So divine 20 qualities are there. So that means your Rajasic and Tamasic gunas are very, very weak. Right? Which are predominant in Rakshasas and Asuras. So as a result, since your Sattvic gunas are so strong, you will pursue what type of activities? Spiritual activities. You go for bhajans, you go for spiritual talks, you like to go to temples, you like to go to pilgrimage. You like all these kind of activities. You are drawn to all these kind of spiritual activities. And also you do a lot of seva also. That is also part of your sattvic nature. So what about these people? Krishna says now, Mam Nyatva Bhutadim Avyayam. Slowly these people will come to Mam Nyatva, means they will know me. What type of me? Who is the Bhutadim, who is the source, the ultimate source of creation. Eventually you will come to know this God who is the ultimate creator, the ultimate source of this whole creation. Because if your mind is pure, you pursue knowledge, ultimately you will come to know the real nature of God. And avyayam, it is indestructible. So which one are you heading to now? Lower or higher nature? Higher nature, which is the indestructible, all-pervading, eternal consciousness. Called by all these various names which I have written here, whatever the name, the identity is only one. And thus, what do they do? He says, Bhajanti, they adore me, they worship me. How? Bhajanti ananya manaso. Ananya manaso, mana means mind, which is single-pointed and fixed on God. That means what? When we say you worship God with a single-pointed devotion, means what? Not yet, you are coming towards that. Single-pointed devotion. You have single-pointed devotion to God. What does that mean? That means unconditional love. Whatever the circumstances you are going through, your love, your devotion for God does not waver. That is called single-pointed devotion. Otherwise, your devotion wavers according to your situation and circumstances of life. That is not called single-pointed devotion. And secondly, when we say single-pointed devotion, means what? We only are devoted to God for the purpose of attaining God, not for the purpose of being devoted to Him to attain more worldly benefits. So single-pointed devotion means I want to attain you, God, and irregardless of whatever situation I am in, my love for you, my devotion for you will not waver. That is called ananya manaso, single-pointed devotion. Such a kind of devotion is cultivated because of the sattvic gunas. So, in whatever ashrama of life, that's why every ashrama we go through, you see, when you are a brahmacharya, it's called ashrama. Even married life is called ashrama. Why? Married life is also called ashrama. Why? Brahmacharya, you know there are the four ashramas, right? Brahmacharya, Grihas, Vanapras and sannyas. They are four, all are called ashramas. Sannyas we know is ashrama, okay. You are staying in ashrama. Grihas, where are you staying? In the house. Yet it is called Grihas Ashrama. Why is it called ashrama? You are not sitting down in the house singing bhajans every day. Huh? What state of the mind? Why is it called an ashrama? What is that state of the mind? It's a hostel. No, you're staying in your house with the family. It's called an ashrama. No, why is it called an ashrama? Temporary. It's a temporary place, not permanent. See, ashrama means when you go and stay in an ashrama, what is the purpose of staying in an ashrama? For spiritual growth, isn't it? So every activity, every action that you do in the ashrama is, what is the purpose? Why do you go and stay in ashrama? The purpose is, through every activity you want to grow spiritually. So when you consider your house also as an ashrama, means even by serving my family, by all the activities that I'm doing, my purpose is to grow spiritually. When you take that attitude, your house also becomes an ashrama. The family life also becomes an ashrama also. So we are not doing things for our personal selfish growth. Everything that I'm doing is for you, Lord. I'm taking care of the family is for you, Lord. I'm going to work is for you, Lord. That attitude must change. Your actions don't have to change. It is that change of attitude that will turn a place into an ashrama. That is what makes hell into heaven. Otherwise, you can make your heaven into... So, that Grihas Ashrama also, that's why it says, with the single-minded devotion to God, every stage of life you grow spiritually. Student life, married life, retired life, every part of your life you can grow if you have changed your attitude to your actions. If you think that I'm doing action for myself, what am I getting out of it? Am I benefiting by this family, with this friendship, with this neighbor? Then that action becomes selfish, you will never grow spiritually. But if you change your attitude, the same action, you grow spiritually. Now, therefore what happens? How do these people pursue their ultimate goal? That is what is going to explain to us in verse number 14. How do they eventually pursue this ultimate goal of uniting with God? So he says in verse number 14, if you look at the second line, there's a word there called dridav vritaha. You see that in the second line? Dridav vritaha. Drida means firm. Firm. Vrita means vows. Just like when we keep a fast, we call it a vritta also. It means a vow. Actually, the vritta means a vow, firm vow. Now, what do you mean by firm vow? That means these people who have predominant sattvic gunas in them, they are very determined what is their goal of life. So this is not just a wishy-washy goal, you know. This week I come to temple, then next few months I disappear. One week I come for Gita class, 6 months I disappear. This is not a wishy-washy goal. This is a very firm resolve that you have made, that this is the goal of my life. Irregardless of anything, I want to attain self-realization in this life. Whether you attain it or not is a different matter. But that is your goal, that is a very strong resolve that you have made to yourself. So it is a firm commitment. Because if you don't have a firm commitment, you are never going to succeed on this path. You are going to keep on wavering here and there. And that's why people go guru shopping, you know. This guru, no, this guru not nice, I go to this guru, this fellow also not nice, whatever I ask him, nothing he do for me, jump to another guru, whole life you'll be jumping from gurus to gurus. So you must be very firm first in your life what you want, right? So dridha pritaha means not a fleeting desire to get moksha. This is a very strong resolve that you have made in your mind, that this is an opportunity. Why? Because this human life may not be given to me again. I may not get this opportunity of a human birth again. So I should use this human birth to my maximum to get a spiritual growth. So therefore, what happens? You engage yourself in various spiritual activities. And what type of activities? You make a vow that from, for example, it can be any vow. You might say, from today onwards, I'm going to make sure that I don't hurt people with my speech. That's also a vow. You don't have to make 20 resolutions. Because if you make 20 resolutions, what happens? 19 will be broken by end of the year. So even if you take one vow, you said, okay, if you are a person who loses his temper and hurts people with his words, at least take that vow. From now onwards, I'll be very careful with the words I say, with my speech. So whatever it is. And some people have a weakness for their senses. They lead a life of senses. So there's one vow also called, which is called Dhammaha, which means having a discipline over your senses. What I hear, I'll be very careful. I won't simply go and listen to gossip unnecessarily. Wherever people are speaking and wasting their time, I don't want to go and waste my time there. So these are the various things that we can analyze ourselves, where's our weakness. And all these weaknesses which we can overcome will help us to what? Progress spiritually. So that's why it says, Dhrida Kritaha, take a firm vow. Be very clear about your goal in life. Analyze what are your weak points. And then from there, maybe pick one point which you are trying to work on and try to reduce that wrong tendency in you also. Even fasting also is another vow, to control your senses also. So there are many vows also. And what else do these people do, which you all are doing? Satatam kirtayantoma. Satatam, you can see this in the first line. Satatam, always. Kirtayanto, always engage in singing my glories. Mam, my glories. Kirtayanto. See, when we go for all these like bhajans and all, they call it kirtan. Generally, you hear this word kirtan. Kirtan means what? You're singing the names of Lord. You're chanting the names of Lord. Wherever you're hearing the names of Lord, for all this is called kirtan. That means your time is engaged and involved in these activities all the time. Whether you are singing bhajans or hearing bhajans, whether you're sitting down and chanting the name of Lord, whether you're hearing words of the scriptures, these are all falling under the same category. Satatam kirtayantomam. Always glorifying the name of Lord. So daily their lives are dedicated to remembering me. That's why we have all these different activities. Why do we have Shivaratri, Navaratri? All this for what purpose? Not that God is happy that Shivaratri you stay awake from 12 to 1 o'clock and 2 o'clock. The purpose is the more and more we bring our mind to God. So we have all these occasions. Why they say Friday go to Ganesha temple, Monday go to Shiva temple, or so forth and so forth. That we occupy our time in the remembrance of God. That we constantly go to places where the glories of Lord and the names of Lord are chanted. Stories are told about God. So this is what is called Satatam Kirtayantoma. And then another very important quality which he gives here, in the second line, yatantaha. See the word yatantaha? Yatantaha means striving. Constantly you are striving. You are putting in effort. So, what's the difference with kirtayanta and yatanta? Kirtayanta means listening. Okay? We are listening to bhajans, we are listening to stories. We are listening to the names of God being chanted. That is kirtayanta. What is yatayaha? Yatayaha means mananam. Then when you are not listening, what do? You make the effort to constantly reflect on what you have heard. Whatever knowledge you have heard, whatever names of Lord you have heard, you make an effort to mananam, means to reflect. So, sometimes you are hearing, sometimes you are reflecting. So both Shravanam is there, Mananam also is there. That is the advantage of Kirtayanta and Yatayaha. So listening and reflecting. That means what? Your mind is constantly occupied in contemplation of God. Even when you are not in the company of people hearing the names of God, even when you are by yourself, you are contemplating on the meanings of all this, of the nature of God also. So once we have sattvic gunas, we will find that thoughts of God are constantly dominating our mind. And the more and more you keep God in your mind, what happens? The more and more you are able to keep the thoughts of God in your mind, what happens? What happens? Don't you think then you will be very careful of your actions? If constantly your thoughts of God in your mind, every action that you do with the presence of God in your mind, you will be very careful of the actions that you are doing. So that is the purpose of constantly invoking God, thoughts of God in our mind. That every action of ours is through this filter of the thought of God in mind. Pure thoughts will lead to pure actions. So that's why we cultivate these thoughts of God in our mind. And then he says what? This bhaktya, this devotee of God, with devotion, namasyantasma, he pays obeisance to me, he pays respect to me. Yes.
About this rituals also, don't you think there should be, one has to achieve a kind of balance, not ignore family, ignore people.
Yes, of course. Because even taking care of the family is part and parcel of our spiritual growth. So if we are only going to spend time on rituals and neglect the family, then that's also a very great error that we are committing to. Right? So yes, you are right. Balance in life, rituals, taking care of your duties and responsibilities, and at the same time your spiritual growth. There must be a balance. Because as I said, that's why your house is an ashrama. If you neglect your own ashrama and go and sit down in the ashrama, then also you are failing in your duties also. Definitely. Okay. So, what does it mean now by paying total obeisance to God now? All the activities surrender to me, that is what he is saying. Now, because why? On this path there are many obstacles we will face. We strive to be good people. We want to be spiritually good people. We want to uplift ourselves spiritually. But there are many, many obstacles that we will meet in this life. Again, don't blame God for those obstacles. Many people say God put those obstacles in your life. No. He's got better things to do in his life. The obstacles are only coming because of what? Your own karma. That's it. So these obstacles will come. But if there is that, what we call Ishvara Anugraha, that means although I am putting in effort, Kirta Yanto I am doing, Yata Yaha I am doing, I am putting all the effort, Shravanam, Mananam I am doing, but there are obstacles, then what do I do? Surrender that to God. So Ishvara Anugraha, invoke the grace of God also. Understand that every good day you have also, thank God. Every wrong day you have also, thank God. Good days, thank God for the blessings. Bad days, thank God for the lessons. You have learned lessons from them. So either they come as blessings or either they come as lessons. So with devotion, invoke the grace of God. Anugraha, Ishvara Anugraha. And thus he says, very important, the last line, Nitya Yukta Upasate. Upasate means worship. Nitya Yukta means always they are striving to unite with me. Yukta means to unite with God. Always Upasate, they are uniting with me through worship. By various means of worship, either you do seva or you go for bhajans or you go to temple, whichever way you choose, you are constantly striving to unite with God. Because that is the goal of your life. That is the purpose of your life. Again, that is the primary goal of your life. As the brother said, don't forget the secondary goal of your life, which is to also take care of your family. Okay? So there is a primary goal, which is God, and there is a secondary goal, which is your duties and responsibilities. So they always worship me with body, mind and speech. At all levels they strive to unite with me. Now since all the devotees are not at the same level, everybody will be worshipping God at their different level. Right? So the understanding and concept of God to worship God will depend on the level of the devotee, at what level the devotee has come. So now in this verse 15, Krishna is going to present the three different levels which devotees can be at, three different levels, or we can also look at it as we have to go through these three levels. So there is an intermediate level, there is a medium level, and there is the highest level. All these three levels are there to worship Lord. So how we should progress also from these three levels, if we understand these three levels. Now first of all, if God is my goal, no doubt for every devotee God is the goal. We are talking about this type of devotee who has God as the goal, but yet understanding of God also is different, right? So it has got to go through some transformations. Now in the beginning we will see, when we are at the very beginning stage of understanding God, God is presented to us in the scriptures as the creator. As the creator of this whole world, right? And we consider this God as almighty. So how is this God presented to the very basic seeker? How is generally God presented to the very basic seeker who has not come to the knowledge of God at the highest level? How do the scriptures present this God to us? To show you that this God is mighty, He is super, He is a supreme being. How is He presented to you? To what? Nature. How is such a God presented to you? Yeah, how do they present gods to you? Different forms. Not only different forms, but how do they show their power? He has many hands, right? Many hands means what? Very powerful. He has many heads means what? Very intelligent, because he is the most intelligent. He created the whole world. So how do they depict this? They show the God, they depict with many hands, many heads, many eyes. Why? He's seeing everything everywhere all around. So such a supreme creature is presented to us. That is the very first stage, how we understand God. He is a supreme being. He is almighty. He is all powerful. He is all knowing. And you go to temple, that's why people ask, why God got so many hands? Why so many eyes? Why? So many eyes because every corner of the world he can see. So many hands because he is the most powerful. We only have two hands. So many legs because he can be everywhere. So this is the very first early presentation of the Lord which the scriptures present to us through the temples, through the Puranas, etc. But once you have already accepted this form of the Lord, then you should come now to the next stage. And what is the next stage? That is, we accept God as omnipresent. That He is also in the sun. He is also in the moon. He is also in the trees. He is also in the rocks. He is also in other human beings and animals and etc. So then we'll come to look upon God at the next higher level, where we can understand the presence of God everywhere. And then, therefore, you can understand God in varieties of shapes, size, colors, etc. So there's also a hymn that is in the Vedas. They said, the world is the feet of the Lord. The sky is the head of the Lord. The sun is His eyes, the moon, you know. So everything, they use the nature to depict the next level of God for us to understand. So we go beyond form now. We recognize God in everywhere in creation. And then when we are ready, we progress to the third and higher stage. That is what? God is beyond all this. He is limitless. Beyond all this. No attributes. Not only no attributes, but the highest level is what? You see, when first of all we are presented this very nature of God, He is always given to us in positive attributes. He is in the rainbow, He is in the sun, He is in the cow, you know. But the highest level is what? More higher than this. Not only formless, but what? All pervading means what?
Everywhere.
Everywhere means what?
Everywhere.
See.
Huh?
Initially, we can only accept God in the good things. But isn't God all pervading? Means in the bad things also is there? In the pure water is there. Isn't He not there in dirty water? Right? In the good person is there. Isn't He also not there in the evil person? So that is the highest level of understanding. When we say God is all pervading, that means not only I can see God in the saint, I can also see God in the sinner also. That is what we call all pervading. But initially it's difficult for us to accept that, of course. We can easily accept God in the good things. I can accept God in the sun, I can accept in the rainbow, I can accept in the saint. But the minute I see a dog, can I accept God in the dog? No, it's difficult. But that is the highest state. That's what we call all pervading. All pervading means what? Everywhere. So,
as children, we came to know about God through by these intangibles.
Right.
And intangibles, we can see that when you look at the temple architecture,
yes.
Generally, you know the God's image, the face,
right.
The idol,
right.
You know, sharp features,
yes.
Eyes, yeah. Smiling.
Correct. Smiling, you know, pleasing kind of eyes. Yeah.
Kind that God is.
Correct. Kind. Compassionate.
But at the same time, there are some temples where we meet where God is formless. The face is not prominent.
Right.
Something else.
Right, right.
But everybody says it's God, so
bravely, right.
It is because that is an unmanifested form of God.
Yeah. It also is presented in different ways. You find some temples, they only have fire. Just fire burning, and that they say is a manifestation of God. So even through the elements also we can worship the God, not necessary through a form. Some temples only have got elements. I mentioned the five great temples where water is worshipped, fire is worshipped, etc., etc. And then of course to come to that understanding where God is even beyond, is limitless. Right. So it depends on our level what can we accept. And we have to go through all the stages.
So, for example, Kali, for example.
Right.
Here.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. But yet, Kali is what is also presented in the benevolent form. And yet, also, you find that presentation of Mother Goddess present in Kali, the same Mother Goddess also present in Lakshmi or Devi or whatever. So, it can be in a. But we have to accept that to understand that God is, can be in every form. Shiva is presented as benevolent. And at the same time, there is the angry form of Shiva also, the Rudras and all that. So, they are there in the pleasant form, in the angry form also is there. That means what? God is actually in both. He's everywhere, in every form. So, this is what earlier which I have described as Ekarupa Ishvara, which is Ishvara in one form. You remember we spoke about that? Anekarupa Ishvara, where I see God in every form. And Arupa Ishvara, which is totally formless. So the same thing here now, Krishna is saying in verse number 15. He says, look at the word in the first line, Anye. Anye means some. So three type of people is going to describe here now. Three type of devotees who have three different understanding of God. Anye, he says, some devotees. Third line there, you see the word, Ekatvena, right? In the third line, you see the word Ekatvena means oneness. Mam upasate, they worship me as Ekatvena, means as oneness, as non-dual, as the ultimate Brahman, which is what? Arupa Ishvara. So, as the one nature, non-dual nature, all-pervading, unmanifest consciousness. So this is one type of devotee who worships Lord as the non-dual. What is called Advaita, where there is no difference in God and yourself. You see the oneness in God. So there is no separation, there is only oneness with God. And how do they realize this oneness? So it is given that in the first line, Jnana Yajnena. Yajnena means by sacrifice of what? Jnana, knowledge. They have come to understand this oneness of God. How? Because of the sacrifice of knowledge. Means they have gone through the path of Jnana Yoga. So they've come to understand that God is one, formless, all-pervading consciousness. So those who have taken to Vedanta Vichara through Shravanam, Mananam, Nididhyasanam, they've come to understand me as the highest entity. While he says there are another group of worshippers, how do they worship me? Look at the last line, the fourth line. Bahuda, various, Vishvato, all, Mukham forms, through all type of forms. Lord with multifarious forms, Bahuda, in varieties. Meaning what? I can see God in the sun, I can see God in the moon, I can see God in the trees, in all the creation I can see God. So Bahuda Vishvato Mukham, in variety of forms I can worship God. As a fire I can worship God, in water I can worship God. In fact, in chapter 10, if you look at chapter 10 verse 17, the next chapter we are coming to, look at verse 17, page 187. This is the question that Arjuna asked Krishna. Chapter 10, verse 17, page 187. He says, O Krishna, tell me how am I to know you through constant meditation? In what aspects and forms are you to be meditated upon me? Meditated here means not closing your eyes and meditating upon God. Since he is talking about aspects and forms, it doesn't mean by closing eyes, it means what? Opening eyes and seeing, no. Otherwise, what form are you going to see? So he's telling Krishna, give me many examples in nature. Whatever my eye falls on that, straight away what happens? I see sun, I think of what? God. I see rainbow, I think of God. I see cow, I think of God. So here Krishna, Arjuna is asking for, give me as many examples that wherever I look, I can see your manifestations. Because all are nothing but appearance of God only. In what form? In apara prakriti form, in matter form. So since God is available in his creation as para prakriti and apara prakriti, through his very creation I can meditate on God. Whatever form I see must direct my mind straight to God. Keshu keshu chabhaveshu. Give me many examples. And then from then onwards Krishna gives him 70 different examples. And at the end of chapter 10 he says, how long can I go on? As many examples as I give you can never end. Why? Huh? Because I mean everything. He says, how many examples can I go on giving you? So he has to end that somewhere. He says, these 70 examples I've given you, start with any of these you want. Right? Because there is no end to my divine manifestations. So now coming back to chapter 9 again, verse number 15. So there's one other way that people worship him. As what? Bahuda Vishvato Mukham. In any form, shape, size, color, people can worship him. And then, there is a third type, which is mentioned in the third line. Prithaktvena. Prithaktvena means distinct. One particular form only. Some people say, I only worship Krishna form. Other forms all I cannot accept. Or some say, only Ganesha is form of God. Or Hanuman or whatever, Devi or whatever. So, prithaktvena means that person can only accept one form of God, a distinct form of God. Rama form or whatever form, ekarupa ishvara. However, it is not wrong that we worship God with one form, as I've mentioned before, but then we should slowly expand our mind to understand that God is not only this, but he is this and much more. So we should not just be very myopic and restrict ourselves to only one form of worship, but try to expand our understanding of God. Okay? So prithaktvena means distinct. So therefore we should move from... Sorry? Is that clear or some confusion?
Even the Christians will say God is
everywhere. Right. All pervading. Yeah, basically. Yeah. That is the full nature of God, right? And all religions accept that actually, that God is all pervading. He is everywhere. So therefore, Eka Rupa worship to Aneka Rupa worship to Arupa worship. Through various ways, devotees worship me. Okay. Now, until we do not come to this infinite goal, we will certainly chase all kinds of finite goals, right? That's what we have understood so far. And what we have understood, that all these finite goals are not going to give us peace of mind and security. So therefore Krishna spoke about the ignorant people in verse 12, and then he spoke in verses 13, 14 and 15 about those different group of people who have, due to their past punyam, their good deeds, they have come to the understanding of the nature of God, and they worship God just to seek God. But they may worship God in different ways until they come to that highest understanding. So now in verse number 16 onwards, from 16, 17, 18, 19, 16 to 19, these four verses, he is going to explain to us by giving us different examples of how he exists in this creation. So just by giving us some examples in these four verses, he explains to us how he manifests in this creation through different aspects. So this is what he is talking about, is elaboration of what? Aneka Rupa Darshanam. Worshipping God in varieties of ways, in varieties of forms. And this is what is leading us up to the next two chapters, which is Vishwa Rupa Bhakti. So slowly from chapter 10, he will say, I am in all. That means, I am in the sun, I am in the moon, that is chapter 10. Then in chapter 11, he will say, actually, not I am in them, but everything is actually in me. So first, chapter 10 is called audio presentation, where he says, I am in the sun, I am in the moon. Then 11, he will reveal his Vishwa Rupa, which means video presentation, which means actually everything is contained in me. So slowly, by step, now we are being led to that type of worship until we come to the culmination in chapter 12, which is Bhakti Yoga. But what is bhakti, we must understand, is very important, because to many of us, bhakti just means devotion. But bhakti has got a very, very deep meaning, which we will understand in chapter 12. Bhakti is not just praying to God, it's called bhakti. Bhakti has got five different levels, which Krishna will explain in chapter 12. So here, to convey the idea that I am in all forms, from verse number 16, he starts the elaboration of his various manifestations. So of course, as I mentioned, initially we can only accept the good things in creation where God is. It's very difficult for us to understand that God is also in sinners also, God is in dogs also, God is in cockroach also, everywhere is there. But for us to accept that is difficult. So, that's why initially he presents himself in all the positive things, in all the good things in creation also. So first of all, here he says in verse 16, Aham Kratur. So now here he's talking about rituals. You know, many of us do these rituals, but we do not understand actually what is the significance of all these rituals. You know, we just see the fire there, we keep throwing things inside, swaha, 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 and then we walk away. We don't know what we are doing. So here now what he's trying to explain, Aham Kratur, I am Kratur. Kratus are those type of rituals which are mentioned in the Vedas, which we are supposed to perform on a daily basis. Okay, there are certain rituals. Of course, nowadays people don't follow these rituals, but there are rituals given in the Vedas that which are compulsory rituals that we have to follow every day. And these rituals are also rewarding us with a lot of specific rewards. Like if you are looking for wealth, good family, good children, etc. So these are the specific type of rituals which are fall under the heading of Kratur, Aham Kratur. And there are 400 different type of rituals given in the Vedas. So depending on what we want, we follow these rituals. So one is Aham Kratur. So normally we say, I am worshipping God through the rituals. But what is Krishna trying to say here when he says Aham Kratur? Normally, when we do a ritual, we say, I am doing this ritual to worship God. But now, what is he saying now? I am the ritual itself. I am the ritual. Because why you say God is all-pervading? That means not you are worshipping God through the ritual. God is the ritual itself. Aham Kratur. Understand that. Then he says, Aham Yajna. Yajna is another type of ritual that we do, that most of us do, that involves the fire worship, the Havan. And here again is very interesting to understand that when many of us do this ritual, the fire is burning there, but when you offer whatever grains or whatever, what do you normally do? You find people throwing things everywhere around. Right to the left they go, to the right they go. Very rarely do the grains fall into the fire. And what is the purpose of putting the grains into the fire? You see, normally, that's why the other day also I was attending a ritual, watching people just throwing here, throwing there, everything, swaha, 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 all going like that. But what is the point then of having the fire if everything is falling everywhere? Then what's the purpose of having the fire? Huh? Yeah, four people sit down, or even six people, or eight people, or whatever. Fire is burning, but everybody is putting things. Part of it is falling in the fire, 80% of it is falling all around. Huh? They're scared of the fire. So they just put everything there. As long as it's there, it isn't matter, right?
I think largely because they are not aware.
The fire, the Agni, is the Agni Devata. It is said that the Agni Devata is the one that carries our prayers to God. So whatever you offer that doesn't fall in the fire is of no use at all. It's wasted. So that is the purpose. When you offer, even if you, that's why you see when they give you the samagri, many people like to take like that, you know, throw a bunch of samagri like that. Actually, only little bit is required. That little bit, if you can put it in the fire, is more significant than you pouring tons and tons of things all around the fire. Samagri is the offerings, that grains or whatever, we call it samagri, right? Right? So understand the purpose. The fire is Agni Devata. Whatever you offer should go into the fire, because it is the fire that is carrying the prayers to the Lord, to the ultimate, to Brahman. And that is the purpose of having the fire, Agni Devata. He is your courier service that takes all your prayers there. The messenger. So here he says, I am the very ritual itself. What you're offering is you're doing everything to offering it directly to God. That Agni Devata also is a manifestation of God also. So that is Aham Kratur Aham Yajna. Swada Aham. Swada is the offerings that we do to our ancestors. When we do these prayers to our ancestors, rituals are performed, Shradham prayers, Tarpanam prayers, and we offer those oblations. So when we offer to the fire, we say Swaha, right? When you offer to your ancestors, you say Swadha. There is a difference. You see, there's a difference with Swaha. Swaha is when we offer to the Devas. But when we offer to our ancestors, then we say Swadha, which is the offering to their ancestors. And that's what Krishna is saying here. Even in that food which you offer to your ancestors, in that very food, my presence is also there. So what he's basically trying to do is make us understand that his presence is everywhere. Everything that we're doing, the water that we drink, the food that we eat, the air that we breathe, everywhere there is the presence of divinity there. Recognize that. That's what he's saying. Open up your eyes and your ears and understand what you're doing. So, Swada Aham, that food you offer to your ancestors and you say Swada, in that food also my presence is there also. I nourish them also. That means what? God is nourishing your ancestors. Aham Ausadam. Ausadam, actually Ausadam, the meaning is plants. Every plant is called Ausadam. And that's why we must understand, why do we eat food actually? What is the purpose of eating food? Three reasons are there. One is we nourish. What else? Huh? What? We feed the bodies. Okay, that is also true. There are three purposes why we are supposed to eat food. One is to nourish. Second is food also helps to heal certain conditions we have. Supposing you have certain condition, you know, they tell you take garlic or you take onion or you take certain, right? You take it to heal certain conditions that you're having. So there's a second purpose why we take food. And that's why in Ayurveda you have this problem, you take this, you have this problem, you take this. The third is to protect yourself from certain diseases. So food is either taken as nourishment to cure a problem that you have or to protect yourself from some disease. So Aushadam here, when we talk about plants, that means that's why food is to be taken for this purpose only. So that's why the question is asked, do you eat to live or live to eat? Most people live to eat. So they don't understand the purpose, and that's why you end up eating, just eating food. You don't know what you're doing. So here he's saying, and Aushadam means actually plant, but Aushadam also means medicine, because those times food used to be taken as medicine. So there's one prayer here in chapter 15 verse 13, which we are told anytime you take medicine, say this prayer before you take medicine. Chapter 15 verse 13, page 275. This is a verse where Krishna says that I, chapter 15 verse 13, page 275. Chapter 15, verse 13, page 275. Or you different word? No. The other one. Gam avesha chabutani darayam. You all have said this prayer before. So what he's saying here? I permeate the earth. I support all beings by my power and become the nectarian moon. I nourish all plants. The word plants means that which we consume. The fruits, the vegetables that we consume. God himself is nourishing them. So when we use them as medicine to cure us, so any medicine that you take also, one you can say this mantra and then take the medicine. It's helpful also. Okay. I'm also a part-time medical doctor. Okay, so there's a prayer there. Because there is a beautiful prayer in one of the Puranas. They say whatever food we eat has got three components. The annam is said to be Brahma, the creator. The annam, that means the food that we eat, the grain, let's say you eat the rice. The rice itself is the annam, is Brahma, the creator. The essence that nourishes you is Vishnu. Okay? So the nourishing part of the grain is Vishnu. And the third aspect is where? So one is the food itself is Brahma. The nourishing energy that nourishes you, that is Vishnu, because it sustains you. Then where is the third aspect of God? The one that? Which is in you and digests the food. So God is there in all the three aspects. That is, the food aspect is Brahma, the nourishing aspect is Vishnu, and God is there as the digesting effect also, that digests the food also for you. So therefore, he is in every part of the food also. So therefore, eating also is a very divine action now. As you're eating these plants, these vegetables, these herbs, because God is a very nourishing factor, imagine when you're eating also, it can be turned into a divine prayer also. Right? So, all food is supposed to be consumed for this purpose, to heal, to protect, to nourish, and that's why food is also known as ausadam or herbs also. It's another word for that, ausadam or herbs. So here he says, in that also I am. And I think there is a few more to finish here. So we will come back next week to finish up this balanced description of these verses. Okay, we end with the prayer. Vasudeva Sutam Deva.